shoot, they score!
Score!
We have turned the clock, man!
Put the shot, he scores!
This week in the NHL.
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We got
to
be focused all 60 minutes.
This week in the NHL.
The most arrogant team he's ever played against.
Do you think it's more of a personnel issue or more of a
scheme? He's dominating like the Jets wanted him to do.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve. Now Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things hockey. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Consider that the last game a week and a half ago against the Carolina Hurricanes at home, the Winnipeg Jets gave up four first period goals. How do you explain, how can anyone on the Jets team or Paul Maurice for that matter explain coming out with such a poor start again against a Hurricanes team that even though they might be in the playoff hunt, it's not exactly a team that you could say that the Jets shouldn't beat?
You know, there really is no excuse because the problem is you were prepared. You know, you had the game on Saturday night, so you had time to get ready for this game against Carolina, and you came out flat, like Joel was saying. And you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, how can this team, when you're so desperate for points, come out so flat and play so poorly? And so, and you know what, it's interesting. Hockey's such an interesting game because it really just goes to show you how, if one thing goes your way, it could just turn on a dime. You know, I mean, we were talking about, you know, the Jets coming out flat and not, but if, just imagine if Mark Scheifele's pass over to Matthew Perreault, yep, and Perreault actually taps that in, what a difference. You know, I mean, it gives the Jets a 1-0 lead and probably builds their confidence, and then maybe they it changes the momentum. But if they don't, he obviously misses it, and then we saw what happened, four shots. I mean, you can only say that they have a dearth of talent, and that's the reason why they're not able to compete. But, I mean, it seems like it's more than that, and that seems like an easy answer. I mean, that is one of the answers for sure. I mean, but Carolina's not exactly dominating the NHL right now. I mean, they're a bottom feeder team. So the reality is you're up against someone that, you know, in theory you should beat, but then a lot of people look at the Jets as a team that they should be beating, right? So it's very interesting how that happens. But, I mean, I don't know. I looked at it and I thought to myself, how do you come out that flat? And to Joel's point, and I think the bigger point is, how do you take penalties? And a lot of people didn't like the penalties. You know, the one against Stafford, I mean, I needed a physics lesson to see how that stick would just tap like that, went that high in the air. But the fact of the matter is the Jets' reputation precedes them. And people look at them and they think to themselves, this is a team that takes a lot of penalties, and they complain about those penalties. And so the refs, I don't think, are going to give them a lot of leeway.
It's been a lot of empty promises from this club going all the way back to the beginning of the season. I mean, that four-game Central Division swing back in November when they got cranked, 21-8 in terms of being outscored, and they talked about how they want to take advantage of this. They had seven games in January out of a dozen. They won five. I mean, all they ever talk about is we want to take advantage of our home ice. We want to take advantage of our opponents coming in. We want a better start. We want to stay out of the box. And they've never really done any of that right now. I mean, they have 26 games to go, and I'm not sure about you guys, but I've maybe seen them play four, maybe five complete games all year. And it's a stark contrast from last year when this was a team in March going into April when some people were saying if they played the game that we saw, especially in the back half of the season, that they can compete with anybody because they had that don't give you an inch kind of mentality every single game, that junkyard dog mentality. And we haven't seen any of that. Even after the game yesterday, how many times did we hear, oh, we got outbattled, we lost battles, we lost this, they outbattled us, they outskated us. Why is that happening over and over and over again? No wonder they got skated today. Should have been more than 7 minutes.
And Joel, both Carolina Hurricanes goals last night were on the power play. The Jets went 0-4 on the penalty kill. As you guys have mentioned, the penalty kill on the power play has been an issue the entire year. Bottom five in both categories. I want to play Paul Maurice's audio right now, and then I want to get your guys' thoughts on Adam Party coming into the lineup last night and the different D pairings. But let's play Paul Maurice's post-practice scrum from earlier today in Tampa Bay.
Is there a message to be received there today for your team? Or?
We'll have to continue to push to work at a high level and develop that consistency. It's a hard thing to do, and we're going to do that. So we're going to... We've had a lot of nights where we compete real hard and play real well. We just had a very difficult time stringing those nights together. So we're just going to make sure that we understand that we're not going to take it easy and let it go and prepare for the next night. That was hard, but it wasn't over the top hard. I left them with a chance to compete hard tomorrow, but we've got to develop that in our players that have been here a while, certainly in our younger players, in terms of moving forward as a team.
I heard in that room today that it's not necessarily that your team, they don't think that they don't work hard, it's that they're stubborn and they won't change and adapt within a game. Thoughts on that? Do you agree with that?
So everybody works hard.
Right.
The level of compete, and that also relates to execution, that level of play has changed. And that's changed after the All-Star break. So tomorrow night will be a perfect example of that. You've got the Eastern Conference champions sitting in ninth. They're going to play as desperate a hockey game as you've seen them play, similar to Carolina, sitting now 2 points out.
Is there a message to be received there today for your team? Or?
Well, I have to continue to push to work at a high level and develop that consistency. It's a hard thing to do, and we're going to do that. So we're going to... We've had a lot of nights where we compete real hard and play real well. We just had a very difficult time stringing those nights together.
You know, Joel, we just listened to Paul Maurice earlier today. You mentioned it earlier. It didn't sound like it was a very practice, or very fun practice, I should say, earlier today in Tampa Bay. I'll throw this question out to you guys because the Winnipeg Jets are obviously, you know, having a tough time here, even though their record on the road as of late has been better. But is this team just not showing up enough and not working hard enough in games?
I guess that's the question nobody knows. I mean, I look back to 2 years ago when Paul Maurice took over this team in the back half of the season. And remember right before their final home game against Boston when he bag skated this team, but it was 45 minutes worth. And at the end of that, he said, well, I want them to know what it's like when they're going to show up in September, that they're going to be expecting a man's camp. And he kind of gave them that little the harbinger of things to come training camp, and they all showed up in shape, and right out of the gate, that team was competing last year. And I mean, we saw them lose four blue liners in December, and yet they're always, always competing. This year, I mean, you mentioned not showing up. I don't know if it's, you know, the personnel has changed a little bit, I guess. They got younger in some aspects, but it's still, everybody wants to talk about this core. It's still the same core. And yeah, I guess that's a fair statement to say that some games they just aren't showing up, because all we ever hear about is them getting out-battled on the easy battles. Why is their penalty kill and power play so bad? Because they're not winning the little simple battles. They're not winning the chases to the puck. So I guess, to say it quite rudimentary, I guess, yeah, they're not showing up. How do you fix that? That's probably why Coach Paul Maurice is scratching his head after every single game.
I want to get to Adam Party in a second, Dave, but to you, watching that game last night, with 26 games left in the regular season, watching that game and the way the Jets played, especially in the first two periods, does this seem like a team that is accepting the fact that they're not making the playoffs this year?
I mean, they'll never obviously admit that. Nobody's going to say, yeah, you know, we're done. We're throwing in the towel. We're happy to change. And the fact is, and you know, when we talk to them as media and we say to them, you know, you're asking them about possibly seeing their friends get traded away for prospects and that sort of thing. These guys don't care. I mean, Andrew Ladd answered it, I think, last year at some point, talking about, someone was talking about getting, you know, players for the team, but for the future, you know, 3-4 years down the line. And he's like, well, why is that my concern? I'm here and my focus is winning now. So this team really, I still think, look, you got guys who are going to compete. Wheeler, I mean, you ask that question to Blake Wheeler, he'll rip your head off, because to him, he's never going to stop competing. He's a guy who gives it all, and he puts it all out there. He plays hard in practice. He plays hard on the ice. He's that kind of player. So, I mean, if you had everybody who played the same as Blake Wheeler, and I think, to be honest with you, I think that Maurice alluded to that earlier, maybe a couple weeks ago. I don't remember exactly the quote, but it was something to the effect of, if we had everyone kind of with that same effort. Not specifically about Blake Wheeler, but that sort of idea. And again, I mean, look, there's clearly a learning curve that these young players like Kopp and Ehlers are going to go through, and Armia are going to have to go through to compete. And so, you know, you can't, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, suggest that the veteran presence that was brought by guys like Stepniak and Slater is inconsequential. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting that these guys aren't trying their hardest, but I mean, perhaps their hardest isn't good enough right now against the teams they're going up against.
8 shots after 2 periods, guys. That's unacceptable in my opinion. And the way they came out against Carolina at home a week and a half ago, that was unacceptable. We have a couple minutes left before we go to break, guys. I want to get your opinion on the play of Adam Pardy coming in for Mark Stewart, who's out 4 to 6 weeks with the broken hand, and also the D pairings. Because you had Adam Pardy playing with Jacob Trouba last night. You had Tobias Enstrom playing with Dustin Byfuglien. And then you had Ben Chiarot up with Tyler Myers. What did you think, Joel, of the way Adam Pardy played? 13 minutes of ice time. He was out there on the PK. And what did you think of the D pairings?
Here's a guy who played twice going back to late November. I mean, he got in about a month ago, and before that, it was late November. So when you got that backdrop in mind, it was solid effort. I mean, the guy did his job. He went out there. He played that blue-collar ditch-digging style in the corners. I mean, he's a tough body to handle. So opposing players are going to have a tough time with him, and I thought he did an okay job. He's good on the skates. He didn't kind of play outside of his means. So, to be honest with you, I'm not quite sure why we didn't see him earlier. You know, maybe get number 5 out of there a couple of times, put him in the press box, and let him see the game from up top just because we want a little bit of a better skater out there. I know that's maybe a controversial statement, but I don't mind Pardy's game for what it is. I like his toughness. As for the D pairs, yeah, you're still going to get the regular guys out there. You're still going to have the minutes being munched by Myers, Byfuglien, and then Enstrom, Trouba kind of interchanging. Enstrom had a lot of minutes, but it's going to be those guys taking up most of the minutes anyways.
Dave, what did you think quickly here, 30 seconds, and then we'll head to break. Adam Pardy, and do you think those D pairings need to change up before tomorrow night's game in Tampa?
You know what? The most interesting thing to me about Adam Pardy was how honest he was in his interviews, both during after practice the other day and then just before the game. And it's interesting because hockey players generally are very, you know, guarded in the way they speak to the media, and he was pretty honest. I mean, and both times, and it's interesting because the first time you would have heard him and you would have been like, okay, fine, he was just kind of, you know, that's the first time they're getting him and he's going in, and he's only going in not because of the way what he's done in practice, but simply because he's Mark Stewart's replacement for an injury. But then when you actually heard him the next day, when he had time to reflect on it and still kind of came out with that kind of surly attitude about, like, well, I feel like my play, how good can I be? I haven't played in so long. And, you know, I feel like I've been kind of wasting away. Now, obviously, those aren't his exact words.
Yeah.
That was the intimation. I thought it was kind of interesting because you generally don't hear players talk like that. Yeah. And I just, you know, I found it to be not refreshing. It was just interesting. It was different. You know, and again, like I said, and he went in and I thought he played fine. I mean, he's Adam Pardy. I mean, if you're relying on Adam Pardy to win you hockey games, then you're really in big trouble.
Sure. But I think to your point, you know, if you rewind to last season, especially in the stretch when he and Harrison played some big minutes there in that stretch when they kind of made that playoff push. And then, of course, he came into the postseason in that sweep against the Ducks. I think maybe he thought coming into this season that he'd maybe see a little bit more ice time. He'd get the benefit of the doubt saying, hey, this team is going to need that big mucker in the corners, and he thought maybe he could be that guy. So maybe he was a little disappointed, and Tim Campbell even asked him that yesterday in that scrum, saying, do you feel a little left out? And he kind of just dodged it and said, that's a tough question to answer.
And Adam Pardy has only played 12 games this year, to your point. So, guys, we're going to head to break. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about Evander Kane and his one-game suspension next segment. We've got David Pagnotta of the fourth period coming up at 6:30. So we have a good show, a couple more guests after that. So you're listening to NHL This Week with A Legal Curve on TSN 1290 Radio. Welcome back to NHL This Week with A Legal Curve. Ezra Ginsberg here, joined by Joel Marcoux and Dave Manuk, filling in for the vacationing Richard Pollock and Drew Mandel. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Guys, we got to talk about our favorite player that wears number 9, Evander Kane in Buffalo. In case you've been sleeping under a rock, Evander Kane misses practice on Monday, gets suspended by the Buffalo Sabres, does not play last night against the Ottawa Senators. I want to play the Evander Kane audio from yesterday, apologizing about sleeping in and missing practice. Then I want to get your guys' reaction.
First and foremost, I want to apologize, obviously, to my teammates for letting them down. Obviously, with what happened, me missing practice yesterday was irresponsible. And I take full accountability for my actions with what happened.
Were you intending on taking the flight back Sunday night? How was that supposed to go?
You know what? Unfortunately, Mike, I'm not going to get into any of the details of what happened yesterday. But again, I wanted to apologize to my teammates, the Pegula family as well, and obviously our coaching staff and general manager. You know, it's something that should have never happened. It's something that I can promise you won't happen again. And it's something that I'm definitely going to learn from.
Are you going to reevaluate your use of social media?
As I said, there were some things, obviously, that this weekend that shouldn't have happened. And as I just said, they won't be happening again. I can assure you guys of that.
Evander, when you met with your teammates, were they accepting? I mean, how did they react?
Yeah, that was probably the hardest thing with everything that went on is, you know, I let them down. I'm obviously extremely disappointed in myself and not being able to go out there and battle with them tonight against Ottawa. For me, you know, I addressed them yesterday as a group, and I couldn't have asked for much more from them than the reception I got from them and just how supportive they were. So for that, I can really thank them.
Are you concerned your leash is getting a little short?
You know what, Mike, as I alluded to, it's something that I'm going to learn from, and I'm not going to allow it to affect going forward.
Is your sense you'll be back in playing on Friday?
I hope so. Obviously, I'm not playing tonight, and I'm just going to try to work as hard as I can to get back in the lineup and help my team going down the stretch here.
You addressed Tim and Dan separately from the team, is that right?
I spoke to everybody in the organization, and that's something I wanted to do, obviously. So I think everybody's on the same page moving forward.
Evander, how difficult was it to stand in front of your teammates and apologize?
Yeah, it's something that obviously you never want to be in a situation where you have to do that, but it was absolutely necessary. And as I said, you know, I just wanted to be honest with them and apologize to them because, you know, I am sorry for the way things went down the other day. And as I said, the last thing I want to be doing is sitting out not playing and not being able to battle with those guys.
Do you worry about your external reputation and perception? People saying, you know what, Evander Kane doesn't take hockey seriously.
You know what, I think if you watch me play on the ice, I do take hockey seriously. I think I can take it more seriously. And I think going forward, you're going to see that out of myself.
Did you speak to Jack Terry or Kim as well?
I spoke to members of the organization. And like I said, I think we are all on the same page moving forward. So I'm happy with that and looking forward to putting this behind me and getting back on the ice.
Thanks guys.
Oh, Evander, some epic comments from the former Winnipeg Jet there. And Mike Harrington, you heard him, Buffalo News, a frequent guest on this show. You heard him asking a couple of questions there, and he reported that Evander Kane was posting on Snapchat from the NBA All-Star Weekend, and he was posting pictures of him and his sister. Many of you have probably seen those. Let's just start off, guys, first off, with his comments, and if you buy it at all, and if you think Evander Kane is ever going to change, because we saw him here for, what, 3.5 years, and we saw all the antics he was getting into, some of which may or may not be true. But first of all, do you think Evander Kane is serious, and do you think he's going to change ever?
I have no idea. He sounded contrite, but that final line, I guess I can take it more serious, what the hell does that mean? I mean, you're getting paid $6 million. Answer the call. When the light's green, you party. I remember having a boss years ago, he said, have as many beers as you want, as long as you answer the call the next day. That's all that really matters. It's no different than chirping on the ice. You can chirp all you want when somebody wants to drop the mitts and you turtle. He turtled on his teammates. He just totally bailed, and that room right now is going to have a hard time getting over that one. They interviewed Brian Gionta the other day, and he said it's tough. He sounded mad. He sounded like this guy is already screwing us over, and he hasn't even been here that long. And on top of that, he's got this legal issue in the background. I have no idea what's going on with that. I have no details on that, but that's just another thing that's just following him around. So I don't know if he's going to change. for the guy's sake, you hope so. Otherwise, he's going to be run out of this league in no time.
Dave, we saw Evander Kane here for years. You were in that dressing room many times for Evander Kane's post-game comments, post-practice comments. Listening to that and just knowing Evander Kane, is this a guy that cares more about partying, do you think, than actually being a good hockey player?
No, I honestly don't think so. I really think that, like, I'm not an Evander Kane apologist. I'm kind of indifferent towards Evander Kane one way or the other. But, I mean, I think I give him a ton of credit. He played with an injury last year with his shoulders, no question. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't give up on the team when he finally, you know, with the tracksuit issue. But the reality is, like, the guy played hurt. He played, always competed hard on the ice. I really don't have a problem with his training, his physicality, that sort of thing. Like, he was always there in my mind. And, I mean, again, I saw him quite a bit. But to be honest with you, I'm not even so concerned about his social media posting. Like, I don't know why, like, I'm not saying he needs it, and some people would say it's a distraction. To me, it's the greater issue is, like we were talking about before, it's how can you not make, you know, the responsibilities you have. You know, and as Joel said, you're making $6 million. I mean, you have to be out of practice at 3:30 in the afternoon on Monday. You know, the All-Star game, it's not like you were in Florida and had to get to Buffalo. You're in Toronto, and you have to get to Buffalo. Now, I mean, I'm not a geography expert, but I'm pretty sure they're pretty close, that if you realized I'm not going to make my flight, there are other means to get from Toronto to Buffalo in enough time for a 3:30 practice to be there for your teammates. So he definitely let everyone down. I mean, Evander's slick. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. If you hear him talk, like, he knows what he's saying generally. And, I mean, you heard, to be honest with you, I think it's much to do about nothing, because the reality is most people saw his stuff anyways. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's hiding something. There's nothing to hide. You know what I mean? So he gets himself into situations when he's talking to the media because he thinks he's able to kind of pull the wool over their eyes. And it's like, well, okay, everybody knows what's going on here, and just do what you have to do. And the reality is, like, look, you're playing with a guy like Eichel. You know that he's got oodles of talent. That's what you want to be doing, and that's what you want people to be talking about. And you don't want people talking about, like, the reality is, why are people in Winnipeg still talking about Evander Kane? And the truth is, to be honest with you, is that what I take umbrage with is the fact that people are still writing as if it was Winnipeg media and Winnipeg fans that did this to Evander Kane. That's the part that actually bothers me more than anything else, is the fact that I was reading about it, you know, 2 days after this happened or whatever, yesterday, and it was like, well, he was done, Winnipeg media and Winnipeg fans. I'm thinking, well, is it our fault still that we're doing it now? Is it Buffalo's media that's doing it now? You know what I mean? So that's when you have to take ownership of your own game, and you have to say, look, he didn't kill someone. It's not the end of the world. But at the same time, when it's the sum total of everything he's kind of done, just keep your nose clean.
He's having a good year. The team has made a big investment in him with this trade. Just don't throw sand in the team's face.
Joel, Evander Kane's got 16 goals, 24 points on the year, and he's playing his best hockey as of late. Had a couple of goals against the Montreal Canadiens the other night. He's got 4 goals in his last 4 games, so it's unfortunate timing for Evander Kane. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres are probably not making the playoffs this year unless they go on a crazy run, but Evander's been playing pretty well, so I personally will you know, believe it when I see it. Actions speak louder than words as far as Evander Kane goes. I think he has 40-goal potential still. He's only 24 years old, but I think he continues to let his off-ice behavior be a distraction.
Yeah, but only 24, what does that mean? He's a 7-year vet.
Yeah.
I mean, the league is as young as it's ever been. We're seeing guys who are 31, 32, you know, basically get run out of the league because they can't even keep up. I'm not saying that's the case with him because he's a physical specimen, but, you know, he's not young. He's a 7-year veteran. I mean, after a while, I don't care if you're 24 years old or not. When you've been in the league that long, he should have more leadership to him.
Guys, we're going to leave it at that because we've got David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com, coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week with a Legal Curve. You're listening to TSN 1290 Radio. Welcome back to NHL This Week with a Legal Curve on TSN 1290. Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Joel Marcoux and Dave Minuk, again filling in for Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock, who are in spots that are a lot hotter than we are right now here in Winnipeg. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of TheFourthPeriod.com. Dave, how's it going? How was the NBA All-Star Weekend this past weekend in Toronto?
Guys, I'm not going to lie. It was it was fun and entertaining. You know, when you get back-to-back weekends of NHL All-Star and then NBA, you're experiencing a variety of different elements. Two different ball games altogether, but two really fun weekends. I had a good time.
So, Dave, you didn't party too hard Sunday night and miss work on Monday?
Well, here in Toronto and Ontario, we had family day, so I had the day off. So basically, I slept from coming home on Sunday till Tuesday morning.
All right, sounds good. You know what? Let's start off with Evander Kane. We were talking about Evander Kane last segment. I'm sure that you've heard his comments to the media yesterday. What did you make of those comments in this entire situation? Is this just Evander Kane being Evander Kane? And do you believe that this might be the type of incident that maybe makes Evander Kane reevaluate what he's doing off the ice and it makes him a better hockey player?
I think it does, 100%. I mean, this is first of all, he sounded sincere to the you know, if you understand Evander Kane and the way he was describing everything, it certainly sounded sincere from his perspective and just understanding his mindset. He messed up and he knows it, and there, you know, nothing wrong, and everyone will say there's nothing wrong with going out to the All-Star game. It's a quick flight. You know, you can afford to do it. You can afford to take a private plane, go out there, do what you got to do, have some fun, enjoy yourself because you've got the time to do so. Just make sure you hit the rink the next morning. And that's where things obviously, went awry for him. And maybe he had a little too much fun the night before on Sunday. And sometimes it happens and it's unfortunate, but, you know, as a professional athlete, you're paid to be there. Regardless of what happens the night before. This isn't, you know, a situation where he set a precedent. This has happened before. It's happened to the Calgary Flames a week ago. It's not the first time this has happened. It's not going to be the last time it's happened. But for Evander Kane, it's amplified because of his past antics. I think this is the end in terms of this kind of hoopla for him. I'm sure he's still going to have a lot of fun and continue to enjoy his life and continue to enjoy playing in the National Hockey League and all the perks that comes with it. But I think this is the last time we're going to hear anything of this kind of nature when it relates to Evander Kane.
With the trade deadline looming large, what kind of rental market can we expect? Will it be soft, or are we just waiting for a team to set the pace as far as price tags are concerned?
No, I think the latter. I think a lot of teams right now are looking and trying to make moves. There are a lot of teams that have been trying to pull the trigger on a deal last week, 10 days ago, trying to get ahead of the curve. We're 12 days away from the trade deadline right now. And believe me, there are about four or five teams that would have loved to have pulled the trigger on a trade right now. But, you know, the sellers are waiting. The sellers are trying to push the market up a little bit and maximize their return. I think we're going to see a very active deadline. We may not see the star names that come along with it, so it might not be the sexiest kind of trade deadline from that perspective, but it's definitely going to be an active one. There are a lot of teams that have a lot of assets that are up for grabs, and we're going to see in the next probably 48 hours, maybe 72 hours, a few more teams kind of, you know, fall into the, or I guess rather accept the fact that, yeah, okay, I guess we're not there. We're going to have to sell some assets and see what happens and focus on next season 100%. And I think that's ultimately what's going to happen. By the weekend, we should start to hear a lot more activity from the rumor side of things and the chatter side of things. But I suspect we're going to see a pretty busy, February 29th.
You know, Dave, just a couple of hours ago, the NHL announced that they were going to be upholding the 20-game suspension for Dennis Wiedemann for hitting a linesman from behind. And I saw you tweeting about it, and, you know, we heard that there were some text messages that were subpoenaed. I guess Dennis Wiedemann's text messages were subpoenaed, and you were tweeting out that you were a little bit surprised that they obtained that, that the NHL obtained it. Has this whole business with Dennis Wiedemann gotten a little bit too bizarre?
Well, I dug a little bit deeper into the whole situation and realized that, came to the realization that because this was an arbitration hearing, it's technically legally binding. And because it's a legally binding procedure, it's considered a private court. And as a result, the NHL has every right to, and subpoena is not the right word, but they have every right to request data relating to communication between parties. And anything that Dennis Weidman communicated to other parties with regards to this incident, whether it's a text message or an email or any kind of documentation, they could have obtained. They clearly obtained his text message. Now, conversely, the Calgary Flames and Dennis Weidman and the NHLPA could have, at the same time, requested the exact same information from Don Henderson, the referee. Now, whether they did or not, nobody's saying, but it was they were totally within their right to do so. So, initially, I was certainly shocked by it because I didn't put two and two together when it comes to an arbitration hearing, which is legally binding versus, you know, another court matter or a non-court matter, excuse me. So it brought a little more clarity to the situation. Regardless of it, I fully expect, actually, I believe they've already appealed or are in the process of appealing through a third party, a neutral party, and I suspect we'll hear more news on that or at least some more official news on that, if not later tonight, sometime tomorrow morning.
We're joined by David Pagnotta, editor-in-chief of thefourthperiod.com here on NHL This Week.
Dave, is there an untouchable on the Maple Leafs roster right now?
Morgan Rielly?
That's about it?
Yeah. On the current roster, yeah. And I think I think they're fully justified in that respect. I don't see anybody else that commands that type of, I don't know if perspective is the right word, but in terms of what they're building, he's really the guy that's going to anchor that blue line for the foreseeable future. Other than that, look, if the right offer comes along, and James Van Riemsdyk's hurt, but if the right offer comes along for JVR, they'll pull the trigger. He was almost traded to Pittsburgh in the summer. If the deal for Phil Kessel and the Penguins fell through, the deal that would supplement that was JVR going to Pittsburgh. So they're willing to trade him if the right package comes in place. But quite frankly, Morgan Rielly can breathe easy. I think everybody else needs to be a little bit on edge as to what's going to happen over the next 12 days.
Speaking of that Kessel deal, LeBrun was reporting last night the Pens might be interested in Roman Polak. Should the Leafs do whatever they can for the Pens to get into the playoffs so they keep that first-round pick?
it's certainly in their best interest, right? I wouldn't be surprised. I think Roman Polak is a guy that a lot of teams want, and Pierre was, you know, dead on. The Penguins have been keeping an eye on the Leafs in the last little bit, trying to get an understanding of what other assets might come back. It might be a larger type deal. If the Penguins can't bring in another second or third line guy who can play a two-way game but also contribute offensively, then they may look to the Leafs for a larger deal rather than just Roman Polak. And you're automatically looking at a guy like P.A. Parenteau, who's done really well with the Leafs this season, surprised a lot of people, to be honest, myself included, how well he would perform. But I think for the Pens, that's an area that they're going to look at. From Toronto's perspective, you're going to trade Roman Polak, and you know that you've got, I'd say there's probably 10 teams that have legitimate interest in him at this stage. Then why pull the trigger now when you can maximize his value closer to the deadline?
So, David, speaking of Toronto and making trades, if they're trading all these assets and they're getting back prospects, what is the feeling in Leafs Nation in terms of how long are they prepared to wait for this rebuild to take effect?
I think the acceptance was sunk in a couple of months ago. I think everybody here in Toronto has an understanding that this is going to take a bit of time. This isn't a quick fix, and they're realizing that. Mike Babcock and his game plan and his coaching style kind of created a bit of an illusion that the Leafs are better than they actually are. And while they do play a really sound game, they actually play a very structured and sound game. So credit to Babcock and his staff. They just don't have the talent that's there. And that's been clearly evident, especially over the last, say, 5-6 weeks. So I think more so than anything, everybody here is fully understanding of that. And if it's going to take 2 years or 3 years, then yeah, they understand that that's what it's going to take, and that's how it's going to work. Now, that being said, things can certainly be accelerated quite significantly if, for example, they end up drafting first overall and they've got Austin Matthews, and or they bring in a guy like Steven Stamkos or some kind of player to that effect over the course of the summer via free agency or a trade. So you certainly and this is for every team, you kind of go with the flow as things kind of progress. And if certain things fall in your lap, like drafting first overall, then that accelerates certain game plans. But I think ultimately for Toronto, if it's going to be a 2-3 year process beyond this season, I think the market has finally understood that, hey, do what it takes. We're sick of what's been going on. Just make it happen.
We're joined by David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period here on NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Dave, it was a couple of days ago now, but wanted to ask you about Steve Yzerman, Lightning general manager, his comment about Steven Stamkos and how they are not going to be trading Steven Stamkos before the trade deadline. Were you surprised that the Tampa Bay Lightning released this statement? And if you had to give a percentage chance of Steven Stamkos re-signing in Tampa Bay, what would that percentage chance be?
Well, first of all, I wasn't overly surprised, and I think a lot of people have indicated the same thing, that because of the statements that Stamkos made, it left everything too open-ended. There was too much speculation that could have gone along with Stammer's comments in terms of, you know, wanting to be there, and we'll see what's going to happen, and the answers will be revealed after the trade deadline. He didn't really get into specifics, so the Bolts kind of really had no choice to go about that. Now, at the same time, they're not trading him. I don't expect them to get into heavy negotiations until the season is over for the exact same reason that they're not trading him or indicated that they're not going to trade him because they don't want this distraction over the organization and over him. And going into the stretch, well, you can believe it, Stamkos and the team don't want that distraction either. In terms of him staying there beyond this season, I was going into this as a 50-50 shot. I'm going to say 49% to 51 that he's back next season. There's a lot of information that's floating around. You try to siphon through the what's real and what isn't. Ultimately, we'll find out later on in the summer because we're not going to find out closer to the spring until they're out of the playoffs. But I really think that for the most part, Steven Stamkos is at this point willing to test the market, or at the very least, get an understanding of what his market value is beyond what's available to him in Tampa.
Dave, I think to a certain degree there are a lot of similarities between what Andrew Ladd and the Jets are going through right now compared to what's going on with Tampa Bay and Steven Stamkos. We've got one last question for you here. I saw that you tweeted this out earlier today. In the last 40 games, the NHL's five worst teams, Winnipeg is one of them, they're fourth last, and Montreal is dead last. They've only got 14 wins in their last 40 games. Is Montreal going to be able to turn their season around? And if they aren't going to turn their season around, who do you think is on the trading block for the Montreal Canadiens? Because we've heard Dale Weiss of Winnipeg, of course, but do you think the Montreal Canadiens are going to look to move any other players if they aren't able to turn this around?
I think they've come to the realization that they're done for this season. I can't imagine them making any ground, even with Carey Price back in the lineup. The problems with the Montreal Canadiens stem a lot deeper than not having Carey Price in the lineup. And the fact that they have 14 wins in their last 40 games is absolutely atrocious for a team that on paper should be doing significantly better, even without Carey Price in the lineup. And yeah, there's the drama involved in that, and there's mind games and all that kind of stuff that kind of comes into play. You're dealing with your own confidence when you don't have your MVP behind you. But I think the Canadiens have come to the realization right now that it's time to move on. It's time to focus on next season. I don't think it's not going to be a complete rebuild for the Canadiens over the course of the summer. It's going to be a bit of a retool. And because of that, yeah, Weiss is available. Tom Gilbert's available. Lars Eller is available. And Thomas Fleischmann is available. Now, one player that is starting to get, or starting, he has been generated a bit of interest has been Andrei Markov over the last couple of weeks. Now, teams understand that it's a very thin market, defensive market, rather. Andrei Markov has a year left on his contract beyond this season. If the right deal comes into play, we could see something like that happen closer to the deadline. He's got a limited no-trade clause. He's got 13 teams that are on his trade list, so 13 teams that he would accept a trade to. Whether that list has been submitted already or not, I don't know. I suspect it hasn't. But if things do get serious for the Canadiens in terms of an offer for Andrei Markov, I think they would seriously consider it.
Dave, always appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot for coming on. Take it easy, relax, and have a good time getting ready for the trade deadline coming up in 12 days.
I'm just stocking up on Coca-Cola and Red Bull and coffee and anything I can to help me.
I got a Red Bull here. Dave thinks it's disgusting, but I like to drink at least a couple a day.
a couple of days. Well, that's good for you. That's aggressive, but I'll, you know what? Hey, whatever works.
Dave, thanks a lot for coming on. Take it easy.
All right, you too. See you guys.
All right, let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290.
With news out of Tampa, with just 2 weeks remaining before the NHL trade deadline, Lightning General Manager Steve Yzerman issued the following statement regarding Steven Stamkos. Says Yzerman, as February 29th approaches, I am stating today that Steven Stamkos will not be traded before the NHL trade deadline. I have said repeatedly that it is our hope to reach an agreement with Steven on a new contract at some point, and with 27 games remaining in the season, our entire organization, Steven included, wants to focus on making the playoffs. I will keep the negotiating process strictly between the involved parties and have no further comment on the state of those negotiations.
Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. Ezra Ginsberg here with Joel Marcoux and Dave Manouk. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All right, guys, we have about 5 minutes here. We're going to bring in Brian Engblom, Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst, pardon me, for Sun Sports coming up at the top of the hour. Let's just get right into it. We had David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period on last segment. Great interview. He was saying that he would probably give it a 49% chance of Steven Stamkos re-signing in Tampa Bay. Dave, do these comments by Steve Yzerman change your opinion at all, or do you think it's a foregone conclusion that Stamkos is going to test the UFA market?
You know what? I think he had to do what he had to do for his team. I think he's thinking, I've got a chance. We're competing for a playoff spot right now. People pick this as a chance, you know, a team that could win the Stanley Cup from the East. So what's he going to do? Does he really want to be engaged in the next 2 weeks of having his number one player having to answer questions from new media that comes into the rink every couple of days saying, so how do you feel right now? How do you feel about getting traded? Where would you want to go? Would you want to go to Toronto? Enough is enough. You know what I mean? And that's what Yzerman basically did. He basically said, I'm going to quash this and I'm going to potentially lose an asset. And which conversely, everyone's saying, well, he'll have the $7.5 million. He's not paying Stamkos to go out and get another asset. Are you going to find Stamkos? Obviously a big question mark. But, you know, I think he made the right decision for the hockey club for right now. I mean, the reality is this, just because he's telling the media that he's not doing something doesn't mean he's not necessarily going to make a call or two. It's not like he's got an embargo and he can't pick up his phone and dial out.
Or take calls.
So, I mean, it's very nice. It's a nice statement, you know, that he made. But at the end of the day, it's just that. It's a statement. It's not binding under the law. He can take, like Joel just said, a phone call from another GM who says, you know what, I'm going to knock your socks off. Let's make something happen. Now, of course, you got to worry about leaks and all that. But yeah. I think that, you know.
Some of the good general managers manage to keep things cloaked in secrecy nowadays. And to your point, he just wanted to get rid of the distractions and the microphones. That's about it. I think it also tells us that they're nowhere close to a deal, because otherwise he would have just said, we're inching closer to a deal as the deadline approaches. Just to let you know, he's not going anywhere. He just said it's still our hope to reach a deal. So clearly they're going all in. So that's going to be a team to watch at the deadline, because if this is his final shot with Steven Stamkos, he's going to want to acquire something to not only get into the playoffs, but you know, quite possibly get back to that cup final. And some people are already saying, I can see the Lightning play the Capitals in the conference final. Of course, it's impossible to predict that stuff. But this team is kind of starting to hit its stride right now, which it's great that we have Brian Engblom coming up next, because, you know, this since the new year, they're a different team than they were before Christmas, and Steven Stamkos is a big part of that.
Joel, you just mentioned that you don't think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are close to signing Steven Stamkos, and I tend to agree with that. Considering that they aren't close and Steve Yzerman has to come out on Monday and release the statement, are the Tampa Bay Lightning, in your opinion, playing a bit of a game of Russian roulette, hoping that they can keep him for the rest of the regular season and into the playoffs and hope that they can sign him before July 1st?
I would think so, because by saying this, now if Stamkos really doesn't want to be there, now he has to go up to them and say, all right, I'll waive my no move, because he has a no move anyways, right? So even if they wanted to get rid of him, they're stuck in where they can actually send him, which is kind of remarkable, you know, given Yzerman's track record. Remember when he was basically when St. Louis held a gun to his head saying, you got to trade me to only this team, and he still hit a home run with that trade. So in this case, I don't think he wants to get fleeced. If somebody gives him a call tomorrow and backs up, you know, half of the farm system and a couple of other players. I'm sure he's going to listen, but I think this guy, I think they're just going all in right now to try to get back to the Cup, because I think that they feel that with the way the league is shaped right now, they have a shot to get back there.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning right now are tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins for the last wild card spot. The Pittsburgh Penguins have a game in hand, Dave, but when you consider that the Tampa Bay Lightning are in danger of missing the playoffs, do you think that this statement is released if the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, are firmly entrenched in a playoff spot and they know that Steven Stamkos still has the potential to leave even though they're not going to move him? I felt all along, I want to get your opinion, Dave, but I felt all along that Steven Stamkos was going to sign. I know Richie and Drew have disagreed with me on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but, I mean, when you consider that they still might miss the playoffs, I mean, is this a gamble that Steve Yzerman's taking where he's probably going to lose both ways?
Well, again, I'll go back to what I just said, which is I don't know that he's necessarily locked himself into anything. So the reality being that if the Tampa Bay Lightning go on a terrible – I mean, like you just said, as they're technically actually – they're tied, but they're actually out of the playoffs right now. Pittsburgh has the second wild card spot. So realistically, if Tampa Bay loses – I don't know how many games they have between now and February 29th, but if they lose a number of games that knocks them out – you know, of contention to a certain degree, do they want to take that chance? I don't know. I mean, again, there's still a lot of season to go, and they're obviously right in there. But, you know, it's a huge gamble because, again, you see what happens. Like, look, the Jets have lost assets that are not like Steven Stamkos. You can't even say anybody that the Jets have lost. Michael Frolik was an integral player, a member of this team, and it hurt to lose him. Really hurt to lose him. But he's not Steven Stamkos. So to lose a player like Steven Stamkos, who's not, you know, he's pretty close to being a generational player. I don't know. It's really hard to just say, okay, fine, you know, we're going to take our shot. Because, again, this is, as you just said, this is not a team that's firmly in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This is a borderline, as of right now, a borderline playoff team. And in their last 10 games, they're 5-5.
It was just to remove the microphones. That's
what I think.
That's all it is. And not to mention he's got a couple of other headaches to deal with, and one of them being Drouin, and what the heck's going to happen with that. So I think this GM's got his plate full.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joel. And that's my whole point, Dave, to your point. Even if the Tampa Bay Lightning make the playoffs, what happens if they get knocked out in the first round or the second round? They have to win the Stanley Cup here, or they're going to regret not trading Steven Stamkos, because there's a good chance. Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period said it last segment. It's pretty much 50-50. I mean, if they give Steven Stamkos a contract with an average annual value of $10 million a year, he's probably going to stay, right? It's all about money at this point, in my opinion, but they really have to win the Stanley Cup here, because last year they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, lost to the Chicago Blackhawks. But this year, I mean, they're not going to be happy with a first-round exit. This is a team, as you mentioned, that has all types of problems. The triplets haven't been as good as they were last year. Jonathan Drouin, they have to figure out what they're going to do there. Are they going to trade him before the trade deadline? Or are they going to wait till the NHL draft? I mean, this is a team that's had a very disappointing season.
And they have a lot of free agents to deal with, and the playoffs could impact this whole situation negatively. Let's say he, again, doesn't see eye to eye with John Cooper and gets his ice time cut, and he's not playing the position he wants. I mean, you never know. By the time they're knocked out of the playoffs, Stamkos may have a sour taste in his mouth from this organization to me. You know, give him the Trudeau salute. We have no idea what's going on at this point. I mean, I would suggest that they're nowhere close to a deal, but who knows, right? Things have been kept in secret a lot better than this.
It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with Steven Stamkos in Tampa Bay. I think there are a lot of similarities with Andrew Ladd here in Winnipeg. Guys, we're going to head to break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the Tampa Bay Lightning with Brian Engblom, former Jets analyst on TSN, currently a Lightning color analyst for Sun Sports in Tampa Bay. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by former Winnipeg Jets TV analyst and current Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst, and I should mention three-time Stanley Cup champion, Brian Engblom. Brian, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks. How are you?
Good, Brian. I heard that there was a golf game involving some TSN 1290 members earlier this morning.
You got ears everywhere. Well, it could or could have happened. I could have won or lost, but I'd go with the lost.
Is it true that Munsey has a pretty bad slice?
Actually, Munsey hit the ball really well. He's pretty darn good. He played the best of all of us.
What about Edmonds? How is he these days at golf?
Okay,
that's good. Let's get to hockey, because if we start talking about golf, I'm just going to get really depressed. So, Brian, we wanted to start off talking to you about Steven Stamkos. Steve Yzerman, as you know, released the statement regarding Steven Stamkos. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning have had a bit of a rough year. They're now tied for that last wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. In your opinion, how big of a distraction has the pending UFA status of Steven Stamkos been for this Lightning team?
I would say almost nothing. It hasn't been a big deal. I don't think it affects the room. I don't think it affects the team. Does it affect Steven Stamkos? I would think, of course, it does. If it was me in his shoes, sure, it would affect me. How much? Only he can answer that. All I can tell you is that he and the management have handled it very professionally, because they don't say anything about it. They make almost no statements until Steve Yzerman came out and said Steven Stamkos will not be traded before the deadline. So as far as the room goes, the guys are asked repeatedly. That's the only time it ever comes up. I don't think it has had any effect at all on the team.
Now, the Lightning have dropped a couple games here, but before that, they won a dozen out of 16 to lead off the new year. What's changed in the new year, and what area would you deem worthy of scrutiny right now?
The way they played defensively. They're just giving up too many outnumbered attacks, too many bad reads, too many mistakes. They play hard most of the games. There are exceptions, like every team. They went on the road for a short two-game trip just a few games ago up to Ottawa and Montreal. Ottawa, they were terrible, just terrible, one of their worst games of the year. Just throw it out. Nothing good about it. Montreal, they play hard the next night, make too many mistakes, and they lost. So it's a two-game loss on the road. And they have just lost some momentum. But it's too many bad reads, too many just glaring mistakes. Who has this guy? Who has that guy? You can pick it apart any way you want, but the communication issues and who is open in their zone and how they got burnt, that's what they're dealing with. The coaching staff is doing that, but the players' awareness away from the puck, I would say, is their number one enemy right now. They need to pay more attention to the other four guys other than the puck carrier, because that's what's burning them right now.
So based on that, what would be a top Steve Yzerman's wish list going on to deadline day to try to shore things up?
Right-handed defenseman. That's been no secret. They've been thinking about that and looking for that all year long. They are short right-handed guys. So they have Braden Coburn playing the right side now and has been for the last couple of months. He's a left-handed guy. Before that, it was Jason Garrison, who's left-handed also. They just flip-flopped those two guys. And it's worked better. Garrison's out of the lineup right now because he's injured 3 to 5 weeks. And that hurts them a lot because he's been their top three guy. You got Hedman and Strahlman, and then Garrison's that number three guy. So he's out with a lower body injury, and that's hurt them penalty killing. It's hurt them their structure-wise matching up. Plays with Schuster a lot. That's the way they were structured. And it's been tough for Schuster to adapt because he's used to Garrison and the way Garrison plays. And so now they're a little bit out of sync all the way around on the back end as far as the six guys and how they flow together. So that's affected the way they defend.
So, Brian, would you say that the Lightning are more likely to be adding a major piece at the deadline, or is Steve Yzerman more likely just to be tinkering with the lineup?
You know what? I don't know. I'm not going to try to, you know, put words in Steve Yzerman's mouth. He is a very quiet, controlled guy. He doesn't say anything. He listens. He watches. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't give away anything. I don't have any inside information. I think it's pretty well known, as I said a moment ago, they need a right-handed defenseman. Everybody's looking to shore up for depth all the way along. I would say that would be the department they would look at first. How you can go about that in today's game with the salary caps and everything, that's the issue. He's obviously had to deal with Stamkos. He put that fire out and said he's not being traded before the deadline. I get that, and I agree with that. The Drouin situation was never a really a sidetracking issue. Drouin decided to do what he did. That wasn't the management's fault. Would they like to move him? Obviously, they have to. But is Steve going to run out and try to get something done? That's not his style. It's not his personality. I don't know what's on the back burner, but I know they won't panic. And if the trade deadline passes and they don't do anything major, that wouldn't surprise me either.
We're currently joined by Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst and former Winnipeg Jets TV analyst Brian Engblom. Brian, I wanted to ask you about Victor Hedman, who of course had the amazing playoff last year. He was even getting consideration for some for the Conn Smythe Trophy, and he really hasn't missed a beat this year. He's got 35 points in 55 games. How would you rate his play this year, and does he just continue his ascension as one of the top defensemen in the NHL, in your opinion?
He's getting there, yeah. He made a major step forward last year. He was terrific down the stretch. In the playoffs, he was magnificent. He has tried to do too much at times, for sure. He has terrific skills. His skating ability is at the top echelon of any defenseman in the NHL. So he can do things that other guys can't do. So he doesn't play the game the way a lot of other guys on defense do, and he shouldn't. Having said that, he's pressed for points early on the first 3 months of the season, and they weren't coming. He was having trouble getting pucks through. He was having trouble generating offense. I know that frustrated him. They've been really, really careful with his minutes. He is somewhere, I think, still averaging under 23 minutes a game for a guy that's as dominant as he is. That pales in comparison to the 27, 28, 29 minutes of other top guys in the league. But knowing that the team had gone, you know, into June, into the finals, they were really careful of him. What I'll be interested in is to see if they up his minutes now that we're down to 25 games or so in the league, and especially with Garrison out of the lineup on defense, will they up his minutes? They did a couple of games. Will they do it on a regular basis? He certainly can do it. But he is a terrific talent, above the realm of most players in the league, for sure, when it comes to defensemen. And I'm just really interested to see where it goes from here.
Brian, is there a team that has surprised you thus far with how good they've been or how bad they've been?
Florida. End of story. Yeah. Florida's been really good.
The real
deal?
They
are a good team. Yeah. They are something. They're a team to be dealt with. They're strong down the middle. Barkov is the real deal. He is a really good center iceman. Bukestad is just, you know, coming into his own. He's had some injuries last year and the beginning of this year with shoulders and concussions, but he's a big centerman. Trocheck has really stepped forward in the last 2 months or so. Ekblad is an outstanding defenseman in his second year in the league after winning the Calder last year. I mean, he is really a good player. Roberto Luongo is as good as he's been in many years. So they don't have a lot of pressure on them. They're being led by their senior guys like Jágr. It's been well written about. Willie Mitchell on defense. Luongo in the locker room. Sean Thornton in the locker room. Guys like that. They have a really good mix. And Gerard Gallant has had a really nice touch with this team. They are a team that you're going to really have to deal with. You're not going to want to have to play them the first round of playoffs.
Brian, we're going to let you go because we got a text from Dennis Bayak saying that your dinner just arrived, so we don't want your dinner to get cold. So bon appetit. We appreciate you coming on NHL This Week tonight.
Thanks very much. Right. Yeah, I'm going to go in and eat.
All right, Brian, enjoy your dinner. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to head to break here. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Ezra Ginsberg here, joined in studio by Joel Marcoux and Dave Manuk, filling in for the vacationing Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock. I really hope those guys are having a good time, you know, soaking up the sun,
yeah.
You know, drinking martinis on the beach. Joel, I'm back here in Winnipeg, you know, working like I usually do.
It's random act of kindness day. I appreciate you letting me join you guys on this show, for sure, a schlub like me.
No, you are the station here, Joel. You do an awesome job here on the station. And I love having you and Dave on because it means I get a little bit more mic time. I mean, when Drew is hosting, he barely lets me get a word in edgewise. So I love having you guys on here. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be me. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. I actually went to the dentist today, got a little cleaning.
And I understand your sister's going tomorrow.
Yeah, me and my sister have the same dentist, and, you know, I kind of avoid the dentist sometimes. It's good to keep your teeth clean, but, I mean, I don't like that fluoride.
Yeah.
I always hate putting that fluoride in my mouth.
How does a dentist feel about your two Red Bulls a day?
Yeah.
I can tell you, after having a root canal, see your dentist. Yeah.
probably doesn't like it too much, guys. You know, I should probably be drinking a little bit more water and orange juice, but I like those Red Bulls. But let's get right into the next segment. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, we've got Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com. Adam's going to come on and talk to us about the Philadelphia Flyers, who are right in the middle of the Eastern Conference playoff race. And we want to talk to him about Shane Gostisbehere, rookie defenseman, who's currently on a 13-game point streak. It's incredible. He's really put himself in the Calder conversation, guys. I want to spend this next segment talking about Mike Yeo and the Minnesota Wild. As you guys know, Mike Yeo was fired on Saturday. Minnesota Wild had lost 8 games in a row. I was a big fan of the Minnesota Wild heading into this season, guys. I picked the Minnesota Wild to win the Western Conference and face the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs, the finals, I should say, the Stanley Cup final. And there's a chance that both of these teams miss the playoffs. So I want to pose this question to you guys. I'll start with you first, Joel. Do you think the Minnesota Wild are going to be able to turn this thing around and still make the playoffs? They're 4 points behind the Colorado Avalanche with 3 games in hand here for a wild card spot in the Western Conference. Do you think the Minnesota Wild are going to turn this around? And do you think it was fair that Mike Yeo was fired?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say that I'm with you because entering the season, I had the Capitals and Wild as my Stanley Cup final. But anyways,
great minds think alike, man.
I have no idea if they're going to turn things around. I mean, last year they got in with smoke and mirrors, winning 26 of their final 36, en route to once again losing in the second round like they've done for the last couple of years at the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks. Turning it around, I can see them doing it right now. The problem is they're not scoring, and they haven't scored in a long time. I mean, they had a good month of December, winning 9 of 13, but since then, 4 wins in 19 games. I mean, you have Mikko Koivu. He has 1 goal in 22 games. Vanek, 1 goal in a dozen. Parise, he's got a couple in the last 15. I mean, these guys aren't scoring. Ryan Suter is their second leading point getter. So I would suggest that they have the ability to turn things around just based on their veteran presence and their talent. But I'm not seeing it right now. And unfortunately, Mike Yeo fell victim to that. And I mean, let's go back to last year. He almost lost his job midway through that season before they, remember he had his big rant during the practice when they had that bad opening couple of months before they ended up bringing in Devan Dubnyk and rifling off all those wins. So him being fired doesn't necessarily surprise me. It will surprise me if they turn things around to the extent like I thought they'd be a Stanley Cup favorite.
Dave, did Mike Yeo do a poor job coaching this team, or should Chuck Fletcher have helped him out? Because the Minnesota Wild are pretty much the exact same team as they were last year.
You know what? I mean, the reality is, I guess, that Devan Dubnyk kind of came back down to earth. Yeah. He wasn't the same goalie that they had last year, which, as Joel just said, took them on that such an incredible run. I mean, we didn't think Devan Dubnyk wasn't going to play a game. It looked like he was going to play every game for the Wild last year, and he almost did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, clearly the Wild were relying on that goaltending to really kind of be the backbone of this team. And if you're not getting that same level, well, what's going to happen? And the fact of the matter is that you have to be able to coach around that. If you're not getting good goaltending, well then, okay, you've got some excellent pieces. What are you doing with those pieces? And clearly the GM felt that Mike Yeo, who again, was only had his job saved last year by Devin Dubnyk's pads.
Yeah.
Realistically, was probably going to be the first guy on the, because we all know coaches go, then players. It's not the other way around. You generally don't, unless there's a reason, you generally get rid of your coach first, and then that usually galvanizes the players because the players realize they're not getting rid of a coach. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with Winnipeg. Once they got rid of Noel, Maurice came in. Anything Maurice did wasn't gonna like, the players knew that it was on them. If they didn't change their behavior, well, Maurice isn't going anywhere. Similarly, yeah. and it sounds like Torchetti is like a total ball buster. This guy sounds like he's tough as nails. That's coming from Patrick Williams, who covers the AHL and the NHL. But and he knows him and he's covered him, and he says that this guy is tough. So I mean, and I don't know much about him, but from the sounds of it, he is. And he could be maybe the difference that they need. Yeah. But I just think they're going to have a bounce anyways, because generally happens when you fire a coach, because the players know they've got to do something.
Totally agree. And Mike Yeo was given a lifeline last year because of what Devin Dubnyk did. I look at this team right now. I mentioned earlier, but Mikko Koivu, I mean, he's got 36 points in 56. Ryan Suter is their second point getter. Thomas Vanek is not doing a whole lot. Zach Parise is having a disappointing season. Pominville, it took him, 20 games to get his first goal. Niederreiter, he was at 20-plus last year. He's under 10 this year. So I don't know what it is exactly about this team, but they're not putting the puck in the net, and it's translating into no wins. They're going to have to get on top of Colorado. The difference is Colorado right now, who's holding that second wild card spot, I think, they're being led by their best players. Yeah, Matt Duchene had a terrible first couple of months, and since then, what is he at? 20-plus goals already now? You know, you got Landeskog, MacKinnon. Their best players are driving them right now. That's not happening in Minnesota. And for them to try to jump into that wild card spot, they're going to have to dump Colorado, and I don't see that happening based on what we're seeing here on the stats sheet.
I think both of you guys make really good points. I'm surprised that Chuck Fletcher didn't make a move earlier in the season. The Minnesota Wild have been struggling for at least 2 months now. They've lost 8 games in a row, you know, before Mike Yeo was fired. And, you know, there have been a lot of critics looking at the Minnesota Wild power play, the over-reliance on veterans. Dave mentioned Devin Dubnyk hasn't been as good this year. I just think this roster is not as good as their record towards the end of last season indicated. And Richie mentioned this last week on NHL This Week. It's a bit of a slow team. You know, Joel, you mentioned Thomas Vanek. I've never been a fan of Thomas Vanek. They threw a lot of money at Vanek. He's always been a lazy player. Jason Pominville has slowed down. I still think the Minnesota Wild have a good shot at getting into the playoffs. I mean, we talked about it. 4 points behind the Avalanche with 3 games in hand. I mean, you have a lot of money invested in guys like Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, as we've talked about. I think that these guys are going to be galvanized by the coaching change. I don't think that these guys are going to give up here. There's a lot of hockey left to be played. I mean, there's 2 months of hockey left to be played. I wouldn't count the Minnesota Wild out right now.
Absolutely not. And to your point of saying you're surprised that a trade wasn't executed, I mean, we don't know if he tried. He's not going to force feed a trade. And trades are a lot harder to come by now. I mean, he might have tried for 3-4 different scenarios, and they just didn't work out. Right now, he's still relying on this group that ended up winning 26 out of 36 at the tail end of last year, which was, again, I'd like to see that happen again. In other words, it was kind of a magic trick, but this team is still capable of doing it. The problem is, I mean, we're going on 19 games now where they have not done a whole lot. I mean, they went through a stretch a couple of weeks ago where the only people scoring on that team were Stoll and Charlie Coyle.
And Joel, you heard a lot about, you know, the Minnesota Wild potentially being after a guy like Jonathan Drouin. I don't think Jonathan Drouin is what this Minnesota Wild team needs. I think the Minnesota Wild needed to make a trade to really shake up the composition of this team. Not to say that Jonathan Drouin wasn't going to provide offense, but Jonathan Drouin scored, 4 goals last year in his rookie year? I don't think Jonathan Drouin was going to be kind of the panacea for the Minnesota Wild. I mean, you have Jonas Brodin, who's injured right now. This Wild defense, I still think, is a top-5 defense, but when you look at how they've been kind of sliding down the standings, guys, you know, there have been warning signs there. And you got to think maybe that Chuck Fletcher and Mike Yeo, you know, before the season, maybe weren't seeing eye to eye. You heard that Adam Oates was coaching Parise and Suter, and Mike Yeo didn't like that. So you got to, you know, wonder, you know, is a guy like Adam Oates going to maybe be hired? Torchetti looks to be an interim coach. I don't know if they've signed him past this year, but you know, he has limited NHL head coaching experience. It's been a disappointing year. As you mentioned, Joel, you picked the Minnesota Wild to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. I did as well. And with the amount of money that's tied up, especially in the veterans. You know, you mentioned, Joel, guys like Nino Niederreiter, Charlie Coyle, Jason Zucker. There's a lot of young talent there. Matt Dumba has been really good on the back end. He was a former first-round pick in 2012. I mean, there are just a lot of guys that aren't performing up to the expectations that Chuck Fletcher and the Wild management were expecting.
You talk about a trade. Maybe if Travis Hamonic wants to come close to home, how much closer can he get if it's not in Winnipeg?
Well, Joel, I think Minnesota? Travis Hamonic would look great on this team. I mean,
I know he'd look great on this. Are we talking about the Minnesota Wild? Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's a little bit of a blockbuster deal to be made there.
I think that they've lost a bit of their identity. I mean, the Minnesota Wild were a hard team to play against, but they still had guys that could put the puck in the net.
Yeah.
Like you said, Joel, I mean, they have a lot of players that are struggling. I mean, it starts with the captain, Mikko Koivu. I mean, Mikko Koivu's never been a 90-point player, but he's got to lead by example. Mm-hmm. And Parise had a good start to the season, but he's tailed off. And, you know, you'd expect guys like Niederreiter, who had a 20-goal season last year, you expect them to take the next step, along with guys like Zucker and Coyle, who's a player that I really like. But they just haven't gotten it.
Yeah.
And it would be such a disappointment for this franchise, because I think this franchise was not only expecting to be in the playoffs, but I think they were expecting to compete against the Chicago Blackhawks. But again, Chuck Fletcher didn't make any moves aside from signing Mike Riley out of the University of Minnesota. He hasn't even played much for the Wild this year. Aside from signing him, he made no moves. So why would he think that this team was going to be any better than last year?
But at the same time, I mean, they won 26 out of 36 on route to the playoffs and gave the Blackhawks a bit of a fight in that second round. And, of course, they're in that tough division. So by making no moves, maybe he was thinking, hey, if this group just grows, we're going to get better and better and better. I mean, it's a gamble he took. But, I mean, looking at that roster, there's a reason why some people were picking them to go deep.
They've underachieved.
Even if they didn't make the, I would just chalk it up to underachieving. That's all it is, unless there's a litany of injuries in that dressing room that we don't know about right now. But I would just – that's all it is to me. It's underachieving. And maybe this coach can change things up and they can – fire it up in the back half, or I guess in the back third of the season here, but they got some climbing to do in so many ways.
I agree with you 100%, Joel. I just think it's been such a disappointing year there south of Manitoba, and this team was expecting big things, and a lot of players are just not earning their paycheck. We're going to head to break now, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com. We're going to talk about the Philly Flyers. We're going to talk about the NHL as a whole. Stay with us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by the NHL.com Deputy Managing Editor, Adam Kimmelman, also the author of 100 Things Flyers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Adam, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing really good here. It's a little bit cold here in Winnipeg, and you know, Richard and Drew are out of town right now enjoying the sun, but we've got Joel and Dave Minuk here filling in. So we're having a good time talking about the NHL and the Jets. It's been a pretty good Wednesday night.
Sounds good. I'm actually down in Washington right now getting ready to join the Blackhawks in their celebration at the White House with President Obama tomorrow. So it's pretty fun. And, you know, the Blackhawks are playing tonight. They're leading the Rangers. So it's fun time right now, and this is really the best time to be a hockey fan. You know, the races for the playoff spots are just heating up. The trade deadline's right around the corner. Things are going to start really getting interesting here as we move forward down now till April and playoff spots are decided.
Yeah, Adam, I definitely agree with you heading into the NHL trade deadline, and as you mentioned, all the playoff races. The Philadelphia Flyers right now are chasing the Pittsburgh Penguins for that second and final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. We want to focus the interview mainly on the Philadelphia Flyers, and I want to start off with Shane Gostisbehere, rookie defenseman. Didn't play much last year. He was injured, but this year he's on a 13-game point streak. He's getting a lot of attention for the Calder Trophy. I think if he continues this way especially, he's definitely probably going to get a nomination for that Calder Trophy. How surprised have you been, not just with the way Shane Gostisbehere has played, but with how good he's been offensively?
I think the offensive skills have been obvious really since his first development camp 2 years ago. You know, you could tell just the way he skates, his offensive instincts are elite level. And I think the surprise is that he's been as complete a player as he is, and he hasn't had any hiccups in his game. There hasn't been, you know, where he'd have like points two or three games in a row, and then he would disappear for three or four games, and then he would have a goal here and there. He has been consistent on a night in, night out basis, and he's really changed their season, which, you know, people expected him to be a pretty good to pretty decent defenseman. And, you know, he's completely changed their season. He's completely changed their offense, just the way he moves the puck, the way he passes the puck, his willingness to shoot the puck really at all times. And it's to the point now where he's been up for 40 games. The team defers to him on the power play. He is the trigger man on that power play. It used to be Claude Giroux. And now, you know, everything's run out of Gostisbehere either setting him up for one-timers or letting him sort of, you know, pick where he distributes the puck when he gets it up on the top of the umbrella that they use. He's really been a game changer for them.
First off, what the heck did you think of that Blandisi dive last night? Perfect 10 on 10?
You know, it wasn't pretty, and it was really obvious, and you hate to see that sort of thing creep into the game. It's not necessary. You know, he got flashed. He was getting the penalty anyway. He didn't have to, you know, the ref saw it. You know, that's, you know, in his apology, he said something to the effect of, you know, I wanted to make sure the refs understood that something happened. Well, our referees are pretty good. They see a lot of things, and they saw that, and then they saw what he did. So it's unfortunate. I don't think it's something that he's going to make a habit of. I think he was embarrassed by it. I think, you know, you saw that in the apology he came out to give. And you know, hopefully it's something that we won't see happen again from him.
You touched on the turnaround and, of course, the time of the year. Will this lead to Ron Hextall being busy on deadline day, what we're seeing the Flyers do right now?
You know, it's going to be interesting. He has been very steadfast in his 2 years as GM that he will not be sacrificing the future. And the Flyers they're very deep in defense prospects. They have five of them who the Flyers really think can be legitimate NHL players. And Gostisbehere is the first, and you've got, you know, Travis Sanheim with Calgary in the Western League, and Ivan Provorov with Brandon in the Western League having great years, and Sam Marin and Robert Hager in Lehigh Valley in the American League, and they're, you know, at different stages in their development. And the Flyers are very comfortable allowing them to stay in the American League, continue to get used to the pro life and develop their game. But they have confidence in all five of those guys being productive NHL players. Whether they're going to be that with the Flyers remains to be seen. But Hextall really is in no rush to sacrifice one of those guys. You know, he knows he needs an offensive upgrade. He knows he needs a little bit more up front. You know, they've kind of made their bones off that top line of Giroux, Simmons, and Voracek. And Coach Hextall split them up the other night against Jersey. But those are the three guys who really have been consistent offensive performers since about the middle of November. And they haven't really, on a game-by-game basis, been able to depend on anybody else. Sean Couturier has been close, but he's been hurt now for about 3 weeks. And Braden Schenn has flashes where he's really good, and then he sort of, you know, goes AWOL for a little bit. So there is a need to upgrade, you know, behind the big three. But I'm not sure if Hextall is going to be willing to sacrifice one of his defense prospects to solve that problem. He might be willing to wait for, you know, the guys he has coming up through the system and you know, let those guys develop and maybe next season sort of to see what's out there and see if any of those kids, maybe it's Travis Konecny, maybe it's Nicholas Aubé-Kubel who's playing in the Quebec League, maybe one of those guys is ready to make the step and be a contributing player. But I don't see the Flyers really making any sort of blockbuster moves here before the deadline.
So, Adam, you talked about the Flyers having a lot of patience. What about the fan base? I mean, how ready are they for this team to take the next step and become a winner and possibly a Stanley Cup champion?
You know, it's interesting. In Philadelphia, we've sort of, the fans have sort of become conditioned to, you know, what it means to wait and to have patience and to build. They saw it with the basketball team. The 76ers have sort of, you know, raced to the bottom and tried to add draft picks and get as many high first-round picks as they can get, take 2 or 3 years of losing with the hope that, you know, 2 years from now it'll pay off. And now they're seeing with the baseball team, the Phillies have started down that path. So I think the fan base has gotten a little bit more patient than maybe it was in years past. But, you know, they want to win. They're used to seeing the Flyers in the playoffs every year. Up until this last little stretch here where they've missed, I think it's 3 out of the last 4 years, they're used to seeing the Flyers in the playoffs every season. And, you know, it hasn't quite been there. And I think it's good on Hextall to take the time and to kind of build a base. You know, we saw how it worked in Los Angeles. You know, they built that group with Kopitar and Dustin Brown and Doughty and Quick. And then when the time was right, they added to it by bringing in Jeff Carter, bringing in Mike Richards, bringing in Marion Gaborik. You know, and then that's when they went on the run. They won a couple of cups. But it takes time and it takes patience to, you know, see that through. And I think the fans of Philadelphia understand that's Hextall's blueprint. They saw it work in Los Angeles. I think they're willing to wait and hope that it happens in Philadelphia.
Well, all I know, Adam, is that Ezzie and I were at the draft in Philly, and that's not a fan base I would want to piss off.
Well, they are very vocal. They have no problem in Philadelphia, you know, letting people know exactly how they feel. And, hey, look, if they go 0-for-3 on the power play, the fans are going to let them know about it. And that's just how the market is in Philadelphia. But overall, I think there is an understanding of what Hextall's trying to do. They see how it worked in Los Angeles. They're willing to, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt here with hope that eventually, 2 years from now, maybe there's a cup. Maybe there's equal results in Philadelphia as they had in Los Angeles.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com. Before we get back to the Philly Flyers, Adam, why did NHL.com have to change the layout and design? I don't know what I'm doing anymore on that website.
Well, MLB Advanced Media bought the digital rights to, you know, all of the NHL digital properties back in July or August. And, you know, if you're a fan of MLB, if you're a fan of MLB.com, if you're a fan of their, you know, Gamecast and extra innings and all their advanced stats, they are the leader in the field in that stuff. And that's the hope that they're going to bring to NHL and NHL.com and the app and, you know, all the interesting digital properties and things that they've done on the baseball side. The hope is they're going to bring it to the hockey side. And, you know, look, they did a 12-month job in 4 months. And are there issues? You know, yes, some people have not enjoyed the experience, but, you know, it's something that it's a drastic change, and I think people weren't really expecting it. I think that sort of plays into it. But, you know, I think as fans maybe work their way around it, I think they'll see that there are some things that are really good. There are some things that are different. There are some things that are, you know, located maybe in different places than they're used to. And, again, believe me, the people at MLB Advanced Media, they're hearing the cries. They're hearing the, we want this, we want that, change this, change that. And they're making updates and they're making changes. And the feeling is, I think next season, you know, I think you'll see more of different things implemented. And, you know, it'll be a little bit more, maybe people who aren't enjoying the process now, maybe they'll enjoy it a little bit more when next season starts. But, you know, it's a growth and it's a change. And I think people, you know, sometimes they're a little resistant to change, but, you know, everybody will get used to it and everybody will at some point find their way to enjoy the site.
No, Adam, I'm totally just giving you a hard time here. I wasn't expecting that serious of an answer. I, of course, love NHL.com. I'm on it every single day. I'm one of those creatures of habit, and I'm definitely resistant to change. I was just joking. I mean, it looks very good. It's got a completely different look, and of course, you just have to get used to it, as you mentioned. But I was just joking. I mean, the site looks absolutely fantastic. We got to ask you about the goaltending for the Philadelphia Flyers, though, Adam, because we just have to. It seems to always be a point of contention in Philadelphia. You know, going back to Ron Hextall and when he played, and continuing with Brizgalov and Robert Esch and many others. But are you expecting one goalie to get more starts? Steve Mason's, of course, got more starts so far this year, but Michael Neuwirth, he's got the better numbers. Obviously, it's a good problem to have if you're Dave Hextall, to have two really good goaltenders. But do you think the Flyers are going to continue to give Steve Mason some more starts, or are they just going to split the starts for the rest of the regular season?
I think it really depends on how healthy Steve Mason's able to stay. You know, that's really been the cloud that's kind of hovered over him, especially this season, is making sure he's able to stay healthy. You know, he started six straight games coming out of the All-Star break while Nyberg was hurt, and it was a real point of contention with, you know, can he hold up under that stress, under that, you know, that level of play, and he did, and he came through okay, and he says whatever was that the nagging issue he had leading into the break, he did the time walk, helped him heal up, and he feels healthy, and he feels strong. If Steve Mason stays healthy, he is the number one goalie, and they will ride him, but Michael Nyberg has certainly earned more playing time than maybe the Flyers expected him to earn. He's had a great season, but again, health issues have been a thing with him as well. You know, he had the groin strain right before the break and played through it a little bit, and then he had to miss some time. So, you know, it's sort of, you know, the Flyers are very lucky. Both guys were healthy and playing well for, you know, the first half of the season, and then both guys sort of got dinged up at the same time, and they were in a little bit of a scramble mode, and we thought, you know, Anthony Stolarz, their prospect, was going to have to play a game, but, you know, they are able to get by with Mason, and he's, when he's been healthy and when he's had the opportunity to play, he's done well. You know, he's sort of hamstrung a little bit by the defense in front of him. Philadelphia has not had, you know, everybody talks about Shane Gostisbehere's offensive numbers, you know, but that group of six has really not done whoever's in goal a whole lot of favors. They're not particularly swift skaters. They get a little sloppy with the puck. They get a little bit loose in the defensive zone. So, you know, when they play well, the goalies have bailed them out a lot of times. But I think both guys have played really well. I think if it comes down to it, if Mason's healthy, he will get the majority of the starts here down the stretch.
The coach, Dave Hextall, how would you rate his first year so far?
It's been a learning curve for him, and he's done well. You know, he's got the players. It, you know, you knew coming into the season that the thinking was with the Flyers that you saw in October, November, it would be a different team come February, March. And that's sort of what we're seeing now. They were not good at the beginning of the season. He wanted to play a certain way, and the players admittedly were doing thinking more than playing. They were trying to figure out where they were supposed to be, when they were supposed to be there, and as we all know, when you're thinking, you're not doing. It needs to become second nature, and now you've seen, you know, I would say probably since right around the first of the year, they sort of got into a mode where we know what we're supposed to do, we know where we're supposed to be, we know the style of play we're supposed to have. Getting two men in deep on the forecheck on every opportunity is how we have to play. Line three guys up at the red line, take away the neutral zone. And for stretches, they've done that, and they've done it well when they've been able to get two guys down. The problems become when teams have gotten through that pressure, they've gained the red line, and they've gotten the opportunity to cycle in the Philadelphia defensive zone. That's where the Flyers have had issues. But, you know, they know what they're supposed to do, and they know where they're supposed to be. And to Hextall's credit, he's really punched a lot of buttons that we weren't really sure on paper how they would react. You know, we moved Jake Voracek to left wing. Voracek had never played there his entire life, and it changed his season around. And it really sparked the Flyers there for a while. You know, he broke up that top line the other night. They respond with six goals. You know, there's been questions about some of his coaching decisions, but there have certainly been more pluses than minuses in Dave Hextall's first season, and I think it bodes well for the future of the Flyers.
He's the author of 100 Things Every Flyers Fan Should Know and Good, Bad, and Ugly, the Philadelphia Flyers. He's also the deputy managing editor of NHL.com, and I was giving him a hard time earlier about the website. We appreciate you coming on, Adam.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Thanks a lot. All right, we're going to head to break now. You're listening to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Rady Fitness Center, official fitness facility of Illegal Curve Radio. With 52,000 square feet of gym space, new equipment, and a saltwater pool, get back in shape and reclaim your glory days at the Rady Fitness Center. For details and to save up to $100 off a new membership, visit RadyJCC.com/IllegalCurve.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Well, Drew is in Palm Springs right now, but we actually connected with him. He wanted to come on and tell us how his trip was going so far. Drew, thanks very much for joining us on your own show. And how's it going down there? Do we have Drew here? I guess we've lost Drew. Maybe he didn't want to come on tonight. You know, Drew, of course, is the usual host of the show. How do you think I've been doing so far, Dave?
I was going to say you've been a spectacular host, a handsome host and a spectacular host. Although I have to say that Ezzy does not drink, for all the dentists who are out there listening, Ezzy does not drink two Red Bulls every day.
No, I actually don't drink two Red Bulls. I like to usually drink water and maybe a little bit of coffee sometimes. But, you know, I got to say, it's tough being a host of the show. You know, I mean, you got to do all the sponsorship reads. You got to facilitate the conversation.
I believe
you
I've
know,
done
it's not as easy as it seems.
I think I've done it one time, and it was like the most stressful thing ever. I just remember sitting there going, oh, my God, I got to write this and write that.
Drew, are you on the line? We thought we had you there, but we couldn't hear you.
Hello.
Drew, how's it going? Of course, you're down in Palm Springs with the family. How's it going down there?
Hello, Ezzy. Hello, Dave. Hello, universe. Hello.
What are you up to tonight? I heard you were playing a little shuffleboard earlier, and you have a dinner coming up. I know you have to be in bed by 8.
Ezzy, look, please. I'm a father now, Ezzy. You think I have time for this stuff, shuffleboard? Ezzy, I'm a father, for Christ's sake. I don't know. You think I have time? You clearly don't understand. I'm a father. I don't have time for these things, okay? I'm upset. I'm a little bit upset. They confiscated my 4-liter bottle of sunblock at the border, and I can only get SPF 60 down here, which is basically tanning oil.
Drew, I know you're a father, of course, so you're obviously, you know, doing your father thing, but did you have a chance at all to catch the Winnipeg Jets game last night against the Carolina Hurricanes?
Ezzy, please. I'm a father. You think I have time to catch the Jets these days? Please. Jets are playing like crap. I'm a father. I don't have time for these things. I have time for one thing, California Pizza Kitchen. That's it. Okay, and I barely had time for that, but you know, the Cedar Plank salmon was fantastic.
What kind of pizza did you get at California Pizza Kitchen?
I didn't get the pizza. I got the chicken Milanese, the Bianco flatbread, and that's all I had time for because you know I'm a father. So,
how is Erin enjoying it down there?
Erin's doing well. She's doing well. You know, she's a daughter, so she barely has time for anything these days. I got to wrap this up. I got to say, because I'm a father, you know, I barely have time. I have time for one thing, and that's just a really quick, a rapid fire, really quick. Is that okay with you guys?
Sure.
Okay, let me get it started here. The NBA All-Star Game was last weekend. Which NBA player's hairline most resembles mine?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'd probably say maybe Charles Barkley. What would you say, Dave?
Magic Johnson.
Okay, what's next, Drew? Come on, Drew. We only have so much time here. Let's go.
I'm a father. Next one. The 58th Annual Grammy Awards were last night. How old was I at the first Annual Grammy Awards?
I'm going to say you were 28.
No, he was a young 17 at that point.
Ezzy, you are correct. Very good job.
What else do you have here, Drew? I mean, first of all, these questions are terrible.
Well, I feel like I'm running the show. I feel like I'm back in the city. Look, all I got time for is one more thing, and that's just to plug a few comedy shows that are going on. We got tonight, Jekyll and Hyde, 9 o'clock, hosted by the old ball coach, Ben Walker. Tomorrow, Handsome Daughter, 8 o'clock, hosted by the indelible Mike Green. That's all I have time for. I'm a father.
Okay, get out of here. Get back to California Pizza Kitchen or fathering or whatever you're doing.
Boys, thank you.
Of course, that wasn't Drew Mandel. That was our good buddy.
Wasn't that Evil Drew?
That was our good buddy, Benji Rothman, and he's performing stand-up tonight at Jekyll and Hyde's Comedy Wednesdays starting at 9 o'clock. We appreciate Benji coming on, or I guess I should say we appreciate Drew coming on for a little bit here on NHL This Week. Guys, that's all the time we have. Joel, really appreciate you coming on. Dave of IllegalCurve.com, thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate all of our guests also coming on. Adam Kimmelman of NHL.com, Brian Engblom, former Winnipeg Jets analyst and current Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. And we also had David Pagnotta of The Fourth Period, and of course, Benji Rothman, a.k.a. Drew Mandel. Guys, we're going to be back on the air. I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be down in Florida enjoying the Jets-Panthers game, but Dave Manouk will be here on Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon on TSN 1290. For everybody out there, thanks a lot for listening. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN 1290.